Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 4. Today we are talking sweet potato power and fruit, swapping out your chronic cardio for intense periods of heavy lifting, and what kinds of stress can benefit your health. Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor, Episode 4. I am Roger, here with Colin, the Caveman Doctor. What is going on?
Not a lot with me, just still studying for my boards, a dark period of my life. And otherwise, I spoke, I think, 2 weeks ago about a couple projects I was doing, looking at nutritional recommendations for cancer patients and the data out there. And I submitted what I thought was a great paper. And the data came in from the reviewers. One said, this is really interesting. The other one said, basically, who cares? Nutrition and cancer doesn't matter.
Man.
So rejection.
So how many hours do you put into that?
I put in about 3 months into that project, several hours a day.
Brutal.
Very brutal. But it's going to go somewhere. It's just the most disappointing thing was that someone actually legit said to me, you know, it doesn't really play a part. Nutrition doesn't really play that big of a part in cancer, so who cares?
Wow.
I literally wanted to respond and say, I just want to make sure you just said nutrition doesn't matter in cancer care.
Can we get you on the record?
Yeah. You are an oncologist, and that's what you believe. But, you know, that's the big point is that people still believe that. So
yep.
That's why we do this. That's why we have a podcast. That's why we have to get the information out there and other avenues.
That's why we do what we do. Nutrition matters.
Absolutely. Do you have any better news for me? What's going on with Best of Philly?
Best of Philly. Relentless Fitness is in the lead by a very slim margin. Very, very slim.
Very slim.
So, I don't know why any body, I don't know why anybody would ever have a voting competition go on for longer than a week or two. It doesn't make any sense. It's very, very stressful. So.
Yeah,
I'm pulling some hair out over here. Lowering the cortisol is what I'm trying to do today.
Oh, perfect. We're gonna come back around to that.
It's gonna come full circle.
Just sit tight, listeners.
But the positive from my end that's been going on, the Relentless Transformation Program just crossed the halfway mark.
Nice.
So it's really a great time. It's a great time to look back and reflect and come into the second half with maybe some reframed goals. And what's so cool about this one is, there are five people that came into this program, and across the board, there's no one that's dogging it. You know, sometimes the program's just not clicking with somebody, or you're not getting the results that you want for one reason or another. But in this program, all five individuals are dominating.
Nice. That makes your job easy.
It does. It really, really does. There's amazing adherence. I know I had shouted one particular transformer out last week, Carly. But, I mean, I really do want to say that across the board, every single person is getting after it and, in just, you know, half the time. So really, between 4 and 5 short weeks, we've seen 5.5 inches lost off an abdomen, another 5 inches down. Someone who's smaller, dropped 3.5 inches off her abdomen, 12 pounds down. Someone else who had more athletic goals worked her way up to one-arm push-ups.
Nice.
So, I mean, a lot of...
Wait, she's doing one-arm push-ups?
No joke. She did three. That was her goal. Her goal by the end of the transformation was to do one. And she's worked her way up to three.
That's hardcore. Hardcore.
So.
You gotta tape that.
Yeah, man.
Pop it on YouTube.
Actually, the Transformers, we meet every Saturday. And we met this last Saturday and everyone was cheering her on, asking her to show off a couple. So she dropped down and ripped off a one-arm push-up.
Nice.
I have to say, pretty impressive.
That's amazing. So it looks like you're the positive one this week. I'm the negative again. That's a couple weeks in a row, I think.
Maybe I am overcoming my first impression of Mr. Negative.
The glass is half full with Roger.
That's right. It's overflowing, Colin.
It is overflowing. Mine is empty.
So I have a big shout out, and I think this is going to take us into our first major topic of the day. I want to shout out a lady who I don't know her, and I'm not being paid to say this, but Ashley Tudor just wrote a great book, Sweet Potato Power. And I honestly did not even have this on my radar, and Marissa found this book and bought it and it came into the studio, and I was walking out, and it was on the desk, and I saw it, and first of all, wouldn't you say it looks like a beautiful book?
It's pretty nice looking.
It's very nice graphically. It stuck out. All right, so that's probably why it stuck out. It's bright orange. I picked it up off the desk, and I was heading home, and I was pretty tired, and I didn't really feel like doing much, so I said, you know what, I'm just going to check this book out and lounge around. And I went home, and I polished the book off in about a day and a half, and it was well worth it. So I think, as a personal trainer, I am constantly looking for good literature to use to convey principles to my clients. For example, in the transformation program, or honestly, just to help somebody out with their nutrition, I'm constantly looking to shuttle good literature into the right hands. And, you know, it's not prevalent. I don't know of, I can't just rattle off book after book after book that has been supremely useful to me. Of course, I use the usual suspects, which is, you know, Mark Sisson's book, Rob Wolf's book.
Taubes, Derry Taubes.
Yes, absolutely. I had that on the shelf as well, Why We Get Fat. But beyond that, the list doesn't go on.
Yeah.
It doesn't keep going on and on and on. And I think Ashley Tudor really wrote something that I can throw up on that list. So, Sweet Potato Power. Now, I liked a couple different things about this. I thought she presented enough of the science and did a great job of distilling that down into takeaway points. So I want to bring up two. Number one, we talk a lot about calories being broken, right? Calories in, calories out.
That's all we talk about.
Right.
Unfortunately.
The traditional model being flawed. You know, I have people come to me all the time and say, hey, if I want to lose weight, I have to watch my calories. They need to be at this specific level. It's all about the calories that I'm intaking. She does a nice job of going back in time, back in history, to a man named Atwater who had taken, you know, caloric principles in engineering and then brought it over to food and the way food is processed in the human body. The problem therein being we're not machines. We're a lot more complex than machines. You know, machines, it's fuel in, burn the fuel, period.
Yeah.
With us, there's
errors with those calculations too, and they've been brought out.
Yeah. I mean, that even makes it worse, right?
He didn't consider, not to get too dorky, he didn't consider the second law of thermodynamics.
Yep.
Dr. Feynman and Dr. Whoever, I forget who he wrote it with. But anyway, he wrote a big article on this. It's one of the most cited articles, and it's a calorie violates the second law of thermodynamics. Yep. It's an awesome article. Well, I think it's awesome. It's probably put most of you guys to sleep. But it's a good article. Oh, Eugene Fine, of course. Okay. Dr. Fine's the other guy on there. And they wrote a couple articles on this. And so scientifically, we've been pulling apart this calorie as a calorie, but it's, you know, when it's shoved down your throat for 30 years, it's going to take a lot of work to get rid of this. Sorry, I didn't mean to sidetrack you.
No, I like that a lot, because here's the thing. If it's flawed in machines, which is what the whole thing is based on, mm-hmm. then is it fair to say it's even more flawed in humans, which is a much more complex system than any machine?
Yeah, it's not, you know, X in, Y out. There's hormones involved.
Right.
There's digestion involved.
Right.
Yet, you know, we're still in the Stone Ages with our calculations.
So I thought she did a really nice job of just explaining that history. And when there's a story behind something like that, I think it's a lot easier to digest. Mm-hmm. It's one thing for me to tell somebody, hey, calories in, calories out is broken. Hey, great, Roger. You know?
Yeah.
Fantastic.
Sure.
Right?
And then they go home and count calories.
Right. You're going to go home and count calories. But hey, you have a story behind it, and you can start giving someone that visual of how this whole myth, or what we think is a myth anyway, was perpetuated. Right. I think that's important.
Absolutely.
And then the second thing I want to bring up that I'm sure is going to give us a lot of talking fuel for the day is how she handled fruit. I think fruit's a really touchy subject, because in people, you know, who are health conscious, fruit is, I want to say fruit's gospel, you know? Fruit is something that is bright, is colorful, tastes relatively good, and has sort of been agreed upon as, hey, get your servings of fruit in. This is good for you.
Yeah, and anything else is blasphemy. We're right. Talking on the way over here where fruit is, it's almost like a vitamin.
Yep.
Like eating a piece of fruit is like eating a vitamin. It's nothing but nutrition and there can't be any negative. And maybe in small doses that's true, but
yep.
You know, the question really is, One cherry is like eating a vitamin C pill. What's an entire bag of cherries?
Exactly. So she goes into the title of the section that begins the part I really like is the role of sugar in our evolutionary biology. And so she goes back to, you know, in terms of seasonality, when the spring and summer is coming up, you know, fruit is blossoming and it's bright and it's colorful. And one of its purposes was, you know, we would reach for it and grab it and eat a bunch of it and fatten ourselves up for the winter. Now, if fruit is helping us get fat in those cases, what's it doing now?
Yeah, what happens when you eat it all year round?
Exactly. Yep. So we're not, right. So we're not just eating it seasonally anymore. We have, you know, efficient transportation. We're shipping it in from overseas. And like you said, we can get it all year round. So how, you know, how good is it to be gorging on, bananas and apples in the winter?
Yeah. And the other question too, people all the time go back to what are we meant to eat? What are we supposed to eat? What did we eat for the last 2.5 million years? And people always say, oh, no matter what you say it is, it's based on mostly vegetables and fruit, and then there's meat,
yep,
et cetera. Well, obviously in the winter, there's not a lot of vegetables and fruit. There's no fruit, really.
Yep.
Very few vegetables that humans can process. Animals can process those vegetables, then we can eat the animals.
Yep.
But we'll save that for another day. Then even in those months when it's warm out, when the fruits can grow and prosper, there's a couple issues. The first, we talked about this a couple weeks ago, an apple wasn't as big as your head. It
nope.
was maybe half the size of your fist.
Yep.
So that's a lot less sugar. There's a lot less surface area, or there's more surface area, so it's more of a peel. So it's more fiber. It's more skin of the fruit.
Right.
And the other thing is anyone out there who's grown their own crops knows that it's not that easy. The bugs beat you to them. The animals beat you to it.
Yep.
And, you know, a million years ago, we didn't have whatever pesticides they're putting on our fruits now.
Yep.
So half the time the bugs beat you to them. So they weren't, when you talk to people, you know, a lot of times, a lot of vegetarians, back in the day, it's like apples were falling from the sky. And I live in Pittsburgh, or excuse me, I'm from Pittsburgh, from Western Pennsylvania, and surrounded by woods growing up. And I actually was home 2 weekends ago, and I went for a walk, and I noticed, like, you don't see fruit, and you don't really see a lot of edible vegetables
yep.
when you walk through the woods. So where were all these fruits and vegetables that everyone ate?
So we're eating more of them. We're eating worse quality fruit,
exactly.
and we're eating them out of season.
Exactly.
Right?
And it's well documented that more modern fruits, unlike the wild fruits, have less fiber,
yep.
a lot more sugar in them,
yep.
and less vitamins. We're not saying don't eat fruits at
right.
all, but it's all in context.
Well, I'll give you know, the big takeaway, the way I'm sure everybody out there, every trainer, practitioner, or dietitian has their own way of boiling down the food pyramid, which, you know, or the food plate now.
Food plate, yeah.
Which stinks. But I go back to the pyramid, actually. I wanted to work with a construct that people were used to, right? Everyone's used to looking at the pyramid. And I wanted to redefine it. And I know, you know, Mark Sisson has his own, he has a redefinition mm-hmm. of the pyramid. The way I like to look at it is the base is your meat, egg, fish, poultry. And vegetables, period. That's the base. That's the largest part. And then above that, I call it an activity layer. And I show people, you know, I'll diagram this out for people, and I'll show people how the activity layer can move up and down the pyramid. So if it's moving up the pyramid, it's getting a lot smaller. If it's moving down the pyramid, it's getting a lot bigger. And the activity layer, is made up of fruit and good starch. So go back to sweet potato power. Obviously, sweet potatoes would fall under that. So this activity layer of fruit and good starch, if you are an endurance athlete training for an Ironman, this might sit at the bottom of your pyramid. If you are a sedentary individual who is staying healthy via diet alone and not even addressing exercise or movement, this would be a minuscule part of the pyramid all the way up at the top. And just that you need to figure out where you fall on the activity spectrum first, and then determine how much of the stuff you actually need.
I like it. I think it's similar, though my carbohydrate amounts may be lower, but in the caveman diet, where it's like that sliding scale. You know, if you're doing more,
yep.
if you're losing too much weight, you just increase the carbs.
Yep.
And vice versa. Granted, you know, Dr. Finney and Dr. Volk and those guys would argue you don't even necessarily need that. Finney has these studies where they're running They're not running marathon. They're riding bikes for miles and miles, and they're running on pure fat.
But let's just say this. I mean, to get to that, it would take a commitment.
Yeah,
it would take a commitment. You'd have to feel like you'd have to feel pretty terrible for a little while, right?
Yeah.
To get to that point. So, I mean, for someone who's listening to us and just wants to feel good in 2 weeks, right?
Yep.
Maybe they can have a few more carbohydrates in there, but we want to time it right, and then we want to do that proportionally to their to their activity level.
Absolutely. You know, the other thing here, we're not totally shunning fruit.
I eat
raspberries, strawberries, blueberries.
Yep, likewise.
I get my berries in. The thing with me, a lot of my diet is how I feel. And when I eat, even before and after I work out, which is really the only time of the day I eat fruit, to be honest, and I never feel as good when I eat fruit versus actually sweet potatoes.
Yeah.
And you douse them in butter. They're
sweet potatoes are
freaking delicious.
Sweet potato, grass-fed butter, sea salt, cinnamon. Lock it up.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
I can't. Actually, I don't do the salt.
No?
I gotta try that.
Dude, you were downing cups of bouillon last week.
I do bouillon, but I don't. No, I just never thought of it. But that's what you do here. You broaden my horizon.
See that? See that?
As a person.
So listen, if you are active out there and you necessitate some smart carbs, take a sweet potato, put some grass-fed butter on there, some sea salt and some cinnamon, and eat it.
Delicious.
But if you are completely sedentary, do not do that.
They're cheap too. They're easy to cook.
Yeah. Yep.
No excuses.
So let's boil this all down. So what we are saying is, right, the caveman doctor and I both eat fruit, right? Fruit is part of our lives. So I think what we're trying to say is, how much fruit do you need? How much fruit are you consuming? You don't want to be consuming 3, 4, 5, 6 servings of sugary fruit a day.
Yeah, I mean, once again, depending on your activity level.
That's true.
But
true.
For the average.
Right. Let's do that.
Yeah.
For the average person, average activity level, you know, a couple workouts a week.
Yeah, I think if you're having trouble losing weight, we have our easy target. You know, I hate to be too strict, but yeah, we have our easy. I don't eat that. I'm in ketosis a lot of the time though, and I don't think everyone out there is ready for that step.
And, you know, just a real quick, ketosis is?
Ketosis is when your carbohydrates are below a certain amount, your body starts making these things called ketones.
50 grams-ish.
About usually. 50 grams. Your body makes ketones, your liver makes ketones, and your body can use these. And you have mitochondria in your cells. Those are the powerhouses of your cells. They use ketones, which are our evolutionary source of energy. Anyway, but yeah, you know, I increase my fruit at times. There's times I actually do when I'm trying to put on weight. So if I'm trying to bulk up a little, I'll eat more fruit. So if you're trying to lose weight.
So I hate to cut you off there, but that was the perfect line, right? If the caveman doctor is talking about eating fruit when he's trying to put on weight, think about how many people you know that when they want to lose weight, fruit is a huge part of their diet, right? It's like, oh, trying to cut those pounds, gotta eat my piece of fruit with this, and then for a snack, my piece of fruit with my handful of nuts. And then for after dinner, I'll have my bowl of berries for dessert, and I'm doing a good job, and I'm losing weight, right?
I mean, if anything, a better strategy is to cut it out and then reintroduce little by little. So then you know. Once again, that I think the sliding scale is just... I'm a reductionist. I like to remove it, and then I can gradually add it on and see what happens. But if it's diet time and you're eating 8 servings of fruit a day, you're going to have trouble. And if you don't, you're probably very insulin sensitive.
I'll put you on the spot here. Average person, couple workouts a week, daily basis, you're building them a healthy food pyramid.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? How many servings of fruit a
day? If your only carbohydrate besides green leafy vegetables, which that's pretty negligent. You know, let's say if you eat several servings of vegetables in a day, let's say you eat 7.
Yep.
Which I don't even know if most people get. How many servings of fruit does that correlate to in terms of carbs? You know, maybe 2. I'm just rough. So then you're already getting 2 from there. How many more do you want? If you're trying to maintain your weight.
Yep.
You know, I think everyone's different, obviously, but I think even three more servings for people might put you in that spot. If you're up in the five serving spot, you might start gaining weight.
Yep.
If you cut it down below that, you know, you might start losing weight.
And now here's the reality of it, right? So let's say they are getting 1 to 2 servings of carbohydrates from green leafy vegetables. And let's say they're consuming something else, like a yogurt or a sweet potato or, you know, other sources of carbohydrate.
That's it. Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. If your only source of carbohydrates are green leafy vegetables and fruit, most of you probably you're not in trouble. Mm-hmm. You know, you're not, I mean, most people aren't eating 10 servings of fruit a day if you're eating 5 servings of green leafy vegetables. Once you eat your 5 servings of green leafy vegetables or more, and then you're getting your fat and protein in, you're going to have trouble eating that many other carbs. If you're eating yogurt or something else like that, yeah, then you're in a trouble spot. So get rid of those foods first, and then you can adjust your food from there. That's a good point.
Yep. Sounds good.
Well,
I'll come back a little bit to fruit in our takeaway section. Try to bring this all the way back to a tangible takeaway. Mm-hmm. For now, enough talk about food. Actually, real quick, before we move on to the exercise, I know we got a lot of exercise today. Real quick, I got a throw in today. I just want to throw in this headline. Subway snares first seal of approval from Heart Group. All right. So a couple weeks ago, we talked about, go ahead, Colin. What did we talk about a couple weeks ago?
American Cancer Society, yes. And Coca-Cola joining.
Yeah. So now, this is very, very similar to that. American Heart Association is, labeling, you know, healthy, what's it called? Heart Check food certifications. So they're going out to restaurants and saying, this is heart healthy. And Subway, lo and behold, snares the first seal of approval. This goes back to the nation believing very strongly in calories in, calories out, because that is one of the markers for their criteria. And the trouble with this is, guess who's funding this project? 200 restaurants.
Nice. Classic Subway wrap in a bun of sugar. I mean, bread is no different than sugar, which we know is very, very, very unheart healthy.
Yeah.
Don't get me started.
So there you go. You get a little negativity out of me today. I had to throw that in. Credit Marissa for sending that by me. Kind of smack the forehead. Mention it and move on. Enough of that. Exercise time.
I'm going into exercise. My articles, these are not New York Times or CNN articles. I'm going straight to the meat here. My articles.
By the way, that's something to note about the Caveman Doctor over here. If you check out his website, every single blog post he writes, if you go to the bottom, right,
mm-hmm.
is cited, right? Citation after citation. The man does his research and he puts it out there for you, which is more than a lot of people can say.
I want to put the science in paleo dieting.
There you go.
And it might be boring, but we need it.
Bring it.
All right, here it is. So this article was published last month in April, and the title, I'll post this on the blog page, Exercise-Induced Right Ventricular Dysfunction and Structural Remodeling in Endurance Athletes. And so what they did in this study, they took 40 athletes, and these are seasoned veterans. These are endurance athletes. These are what your most of your doctors out there, most of your health leaders call like the healthiest people on earth. These are the guys that can run for days.
Yep.
So they took 40 of them, they studied them at baseline, they studied them following a race, a 3 to 11 hour race, and then they followed them 1 week post-race. They did all these heart tests, they took all these labs, and the biggest thing, so they took a lab called troponins, and troponin is what's released in your blood when your muscle of your heart gets damaged. So when you have a heart attack, for instance, the muscle of your heart, there's no blood to it, it gets damaged, it releases troponin.
Okay.
They also looked at a thing called ejection fraction, and that's how much blood your heart pumps out per beat. And they looked at a couple other things too. Interestingly, basically the amount of intense endurance exercise that you did, it caused short-term dysfunction of the right ventricle, so the right side of your heart. And this actually recovers in the short term, but chronic changes were seen in these people's heart over long periods of time. Also seen was reduced function in the right ventricle, so their hearts were actually worse at functioning in the long term. They also had significant releases of troponins, which is that serum level that shows heart damage. And There's actually another article similar to this where they took labs after people that ran the Boston Marathon. And a majority of them, if they checked into an ER and got their labs taken, they would have tested positive for a heart attack. And they would have been treated for a heart attack.
Wow.
And so I think, yeah, that says a lot. And I know this is a little sciencey, but the point here is that these long distance exercise, long-term endurance exercise, hours and hours of jogging, it destroys your heart. This is a stress. This is a chronic stress. And it destroys your joints too, let's be honest, your knees, et cetera. This is not healthy, and it's not healthy for your heart. And these people that have said jogging is heart healthy for the last 30 years, it is wrong.
Bring that back one more time. The Boston Marathoners, what was the statistic? How many would have tested positive
for a heart attack if they went into an emergency room?
That's nuts.
Yeah, I wrote a post on this on my blog. I never actually posted it yet. It's sitting. I need to finalize it. But
it's in. Go check out Colin's drafts.
Yeah, it'll be out there soon. But I talk about that in there. Where, yeah, these people legit are having what would we define as a heart attack. And conversely, I'm going to bring up another article here.
That'll give you something to think about when you're running your next marathon.
Yeah. which ER to check
in? Am I having a heart attack right now?
So that's another one of our misguided health theories. Another article here, this is back to 95, and there's a ton of articles on this. And in this article, this is actually from, I just saw it, the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. So giving a shout out to, once again, the City of Champions, which always ticks Roger off.
Brutal.
But anyway, they took 28 subjects and they put them into one group, and they took 28 more subjects and put them in another group. And these were exercise groups. So everyone was getting different types of exercise. Half of them got the long bout exercise group. And so these were the people that exercised for 20 to 40 minutes per day. The other group was the short bout group, and they exercised in 10-minute bouts throughout the day. And this kind of goes into your takeaway from last week. And they tried to see who lost the most amount of weight, first off. And they also tried to see who actually followed instructions more.
Okay.
So one thing you experience probably a lot more than me is, you know, you give people all these exercise routines, but really, if they don't follow them, it doesn't matter. So interestingly, they looked over long-term adherence to these exercises, and more people followed the multiple short bouts per day.
Yep.
And not only did more people follow this exercise, but it was actually significantly better at enhancing weight loss and producing changes in cardiorespiratory fitness. These are positive changes. These aren't causing people to have heart attacks. And this was in 95. This is one of the first studies where they did this. There's a ton more now where they do high-intensity training.
Yep.
And there's more studies now where they compare more of the chronic long-term cardio, like I presented in that first study,
yep,
with high intensity training, or more like half hour long sessions of, you get in the gym, you know, you kick your butt, you throw around some really heavy weights, and you get out. And there's actually recent studies where they compare treadmill running with heavy weight lifting. And the general scheme here is, we're pushing away from these long distance endurance marathon type running, which we've never done in our history. I mean, I think the first guy to run a marathon actually died.
Yeah.
I mean, that should have been the last. At that point, they should have been like, all right, sweet, but we're never doing that again. I mean, people used to do that stuff on horses. And I think the horses would die. Now,
what was that segue like? This dude died. Let's go do what he did.
Let's go do it. Yeah. It's obviously good for your health, or for your heart. So anyway, we've never done that. We did lift really heavy things. And this is going to be my takeaway. I don't want to get in too much. But we did sprint, we did lift heavy things, and these may have actual health advantages. They may not. I'm going to play dumb here for a minute, but we're definitely seeing now that this long pounding of your legs, pounding of your heart, mm-hmm. this chronic cardio is bad. And people suspected this for, you know, decades. I'm blanking on his name now, but one of the guys that wrote an article with Lauren Cordain about exercising like our ancestors.
Yep.
And he published this, I think it was a decade ago. And the science was just being formulated, but there is a lot of science out there. And I have this article soon, which quotes it all, but stop jogging. It's just destroying your legs and it's destroying your heart.
Yep. Knee replacements at 60, right?
Yeah, exactly. So lift and train how we were programmed to lift and train over the last 2.5 million years.
And speaking of exercise, what is the quote-unquote truth about exercise? That was a corny shout-out to Skylar Tanner's latest blog post. So Skylar is an exercise science grad student, and he wrote this article basically to say, if you are after fat loss, you know, if you're looking to, you know, quote unquote, burn calories and shed fat, look elsewhere. Do not look at exercise as the solution. Clean up your diet first. And I could not agree with them more. So it really, really does a nice, very quick, effective job of making this distinction. You want the fat loss, clean up your diet. You want to improve your health, you can look to exactly what Colin's saying, these brief, effective, you know, bursts of exercise. I tell clients all the time, lead with nutrition, shape with exercise. Nutrition's got to come first. If you don't have that locked down, you're going to be fighting a losing battle.
Absolutely. I mean, it's arguably worse for some people to start exercising when they have a poor diet.
Sure.
Because you get a energy deficit, so you have to increase your input. And if you're going to eat the wrong stuff, it's no good.
Yep.
I actually had a fraternity brother of mine order a pizza in the middle of one of our workouts.
Did he eat it before the workout was done?
He ate it before the workout, and I never worked out with him again. So, and he was my pledge father.
Wow.
So I hope he's not listening to this. Anyway.
What kind of pizza was it?
It was actually a Domino's.
Nice.
It's not a gluten-free Domino's.
We did not script that. So if you've been listening to this podcast from the beginning, you'll know that we went negative. I went negative style on Domino's in week one here.
It was an appropriate negative.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm glad you brought that up, Roger. It's a point well taken, and everyone out there, keep that in mind. If you're exercising but not changing your diet, don't be surprised if you don't lose weight.
Yep. Which is a shame, because I think a lot of people do. It's just, I need to get that extra workout. Hey, I'm not getting these results. I might as well up my workout quantity from 4 to 5, you know, get that fifth session.
Yeah.
Get that 60-minute jog, right? Let's hit the gym, look around, what do I want to do today? Let me hop on that elliptical for 60 minutes, sweat into a towel and leave.
Everyone out there, next time you walk through your gym, some of you may get mad at me for saying this, but look around. And the people chugging away on the elliptical machines, they're not necessarily the people that are reaching that goal that they want to reach. And I go talk to everyone in my gym all the time. I go in there and say hi to everyone. Yet I feel like when you walk back to the weight room area, those people are generally where they want to be with weight. Why is that if they're not pounding away, doing hours and hours of cardio?
Yep.
Getting a quote-unquote energy deficit.
So Colin says, take a look around. Who's lifting the weights?
Exactly.
Nice. Takeaway time?
Let's do some takeaways.
Tangible takeaways.
So the caveman corner.
No, it's not caveman corner time yet, man. Come on. Oh. We go exercise first.
Sorry. Then you can lead us off.
All right.
My faux pas.
What counts as exercise is my tangible takeaway, that you need to be looking at all aspects of your life and adjust accordingly. Yesterday, I want to give a big shout out to the super trainer at Relentless Fitness. His name is Ross, and he just entered the world of home ownership. So we moved him yesterday, house to house, and moving is definitely exercise.
Exercise.
Can definitely be, depending on what you're moving. But if you are throwing around heavy furniture, boxes, bins, dressers, yada, 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 I would say that counts. And I got home last night and I was pretty tired, and, you know, came in today and certainly feel the effects. And I say that counts. And I say that, hey, if I had been planning a milestone workout this morning, Monday morning, coming on the heels of a move, I might have to reconsider that. So just think about these things that are, you know, impromptu popping up in your life, whether it's a move, whether it was a nice day, you went out to the park, you saw some people playing, you know, football, and you jumped in and you ended up playing 6 games of it. And you had that, like I said, you're planning that great weight lift the next morning. Might be reason enough to reconsider your structure, reconsider your program for the week.
I agree. I had squats planned today for the gym.
Yeah.
I walked about 6.5 miles yesterday while listening to one of my physics MP3s. And needless to say, I'm not squatting today. I don't think I'm lifting legs. I'm glad. It's great.
Yep. So keep it all in mind. Respond to your body and reformat the program if necessary.
I like it.
What do you got?
Mine was to get out there and walk again.
There you go.
I was going to say I walked for about...
looking to avoid squats? Walk six and a half miles and then convince yourself that you don't need to do them the next day.
Absolutely. I'm actually just echoing what I said last week about getting out there and walking. And my caveman corner is going to echo this as well. But last week I said, get out there and walk. Now this week I'm posting these articles that say, if you jog long distances, it tears your heart up.
Yep.
And my point is, walk a lot, sprint some, lift heavy things. And yep. I'm going to pause there. I'm going to continue this when I do my caveman corner.
Nice. So I think we just gave everyone out there reason enough to ditch their, you know, record setting heavy workout. They see it coming the next day. They're like, all right, so Roger and Colin said, all I need to do is I need to find someone that's moving today and help them out with that. Or I'll just walk six and a half miles. And then it's off the list.
Never need a squat.
Never need a squat.
People hate the squat anyway.
I prefer a deadlift.
I've been doing a lot of cleans and hacks and those kind of things.
Nice.
Try not to blow my back up, which happens.
Yeah.
Has happened in the past. So we'll see how it goes.
Nutrition time, huh?
Nutrition time?
Yeah, still not caveman corner time, man. I'm going to give you the intro. We don't have the sound effect, but I promise you.
All right.
The sound effect's coming. The smash of a club and, you know, something.
Can't wait for that day.
Yeah. It's coming. All right. So nutrition.
Go for it.
My takeaway is this. Take a look at your fruit consumption. Period. And give you a level. If you are consuming more than 3 servings of fruit a day, maybe consider stepping back. So just take a look. If you're having, you know, 2 bananas, an apple, some berries, and a peach, you might want to consider dropping that down. Just see how you feel dropping that fruit consumption down between the 1 and 3 number. You say that's fair?
Fair range? And I'm actually going to one-up you on my takeaway.
Whoa.
I'm going to say, if you're questioning how much fruit you should be eating, and you're still eating grains or bread or getting these other exogenous sources of carbohydrates, I think you need to take a big step back. And worry about cutting those out before you worry about cutting out your fruit. Because if you're eating those, you're going to...
Yeah, we're talking advanced level right now.
You're going to be way over. All right.
We have to give some scale. You're more, you know? We're like at number 8 on the advanced scale right now.
I like what you said. And the other thing, and I know a lot of people are against this, but the other point there too is if you need to get it in there, if you're not feeling great on your workouts, do it around your workout time.
Yeah.
You're much more insulin sensitive, especially an hour after, some say up to 4 hours after, but around those times, your insulin's not going to go through the roof. You're going to use that. It's going to get up, flick the switch on your anabolic machinery. And, you know, you may throw those into muscle. So that's my takeaway. Do it around workout time.
Love it. All right. Let's tack that right on. Let's say, take a look at your fruit consumption, consider cutting it back slightly, and preferentially eat it around a workout.
Absolutely.
Bam.
I like it.
Oh, and with that,
are we there?
Oh, we're there. It's time for the caveman corner.
All right. So this was so good in my head when I said it beforehand. So I hope it comes out like that, but
make it so.
So my big thing is we've been basically seeing acute stresses for about 2.5 million years in the history of humans, etc. There's been a lot of acute stresses followed by calming periods.
Yep.
I think that should kind of carry over to our lives nowadays as well. And workout-wise, I think we're kind of saying that same thing. So we're saying, I'll get there in a second. So I think we're saying the same thing. And now, for historical context, if you think about for the last couple millions of years, what did we do? What were our stresses in terms of especially exercise stresses? You know, running from a bear, running from a predator, running from another human. And that's an acute stress. Your heart's pumping through the roof. Your blood's flowing. You're running. Another one, lifting heavy objects. You know, you're building your house. You're lifting a boulder, etc. But then these are kind of intermingled with you're sitting with your clan. You're just kind of relaxing. You're watching the clouds go by. There wasn't really a lot of in between. There's no marathon running. There's no 4-hour long endurance training.
Yep.
And I think that can kind of carry over to the stresses of our life too, where we all have acute stresses at work. We have self-induced acute stresses. I mean, I'm going to have a self-induced acute stress in about an hour when I go to the gym. Use that walking time. Once again, coming back to the walking, I said last week, get out there and walk around. Use that as your calming period of stress reduction.
Yep.
You know, blast your muscles by sprinting. Blast your muscles by lifting heavy things. Walk around. Listen to a podcast. Really just let go mentally, and it also, it helps your body recover. That's kind of my big takeaway. Acute stresses, avoiding chronic stresses, and then followed by stress reliever periods. So just moving kind of slowly.
Nice.
What do you got?
I like it. Very effective.
It's a little philosophical. But...
Relentless Report is as follows. You know, I always like to talk about change. It's one of my fascinations. Change, transformation, all that good stuff. So here's my thing. When you're looking to change something, set yourself up for success. Know that whenever you introduce a program, you're going to be very excited about it. You're going to be jacked up. The adrenaline's going to be flowing. Pretty much whatever you do in those first couple weeks, you're going to have success with. You can muscle through just about anything for a couple weeks. Again, the adrenaline will be high. But set yourself up for success. Make sure you're doing it smartly within the period of adrenaline so that when the adrenaline fades, you are left with positive habit. Because if you have a stupid plan, you'll pump through it for a few weeks and then it'll fall off a cliff when the adrenaline subsides. So I always tell my clients, be excited about the adrenaline, ride the adrenaline wave, use it to your advantage, but use it to set up the positive habits that are going to carry your change forward for weeks and months and years to come.
I like it.
Bam.
There's a lot of overlap with what we're saying.
I know.
The adrenaline, the acute stress, your adrenaline's pumping, your heart's beating, but then when it's off, turn it off.
Yep.
Don't run that marathon and...
Watch the clouds. And,
yeah,
go by.
Watch the clouds. I like it.
I think this has been another good one. We're starting to hit our stride here.
We are. Keep the comments coming.
Yeah, we're going to have a question section.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So the more you guys want to know, the bigger that section will be. You know, we'll definitely take the time to answer your questions. And if not on air, then certainly off air. Via email and all that good stuff. Speaking of, check out Colin Champ on cavemandoctor.com. Episode will be up there. Drop him a comment. You can find me on rogerdickerman.com and please drop me a comment as well. For Colin and I, this has been episode 4 of Relentless Roger and the Caveman Doctor.
Let's do it. You know what? Screw it. I'm going to go squat anyway.
Oh, here come the squats.
We're out. Take care, everyone.
See you next time.